Thank you very much, and I want to thank Brian and UNAA for the invitation to come along and speak to you today, particularly on such an important issue and at such a momentous time. So I hope you can see me over there, that might be better. I'm going to actually speak a little bit of the same things that Chris has, but with much more of a government perspective, if you like, on a bit of the history as well as going forward. As Chris has kind of outlined, there's two parts to this agenda. While the topic is the Sustainable Development Goals, actually that's not the way we should be looking at it now. What we have is the Financing for Development Agreement that was agreed in July in Addis. We add to that our Sustainable Development Goals. If you like, the Sustainable Development Goals are what we want to do. Financing for development is very much how. It's the money and it's the development effectiveness side of things. And what that gives us is the 2030 agenda. So it sets the way forward for the next 15 years and possibly beyond. But before we do that, I want to take us back a bit. If you remember 2000, where you were on that night, but back to 2000 and back to the Millennium Development Goals, because I think to understand where we are now and where we're going, we really do need to understand where we've come from, both as the UN system, but also as an international community. The MDGs, as I'm sure you all know, 8 goals, 20 targets. They weren't negotiated. They drew together a lot of negotiated outcomes amongst member states, such as Rio, the first Rio conference, the Cairo International Conference on Population and Development, and Beijing Women's Conference way back in 95, and kind of built on all of that. But they weren't actually intergovernmentally agreed. They were, I think, set up in the narrative of the Millennium Summit in 2000, and actually the goals themselves really were released in 2001, and were much more a product of the UN system. It was actually the UN agencies that says, well, we've got all these bits and pieces, let's pull them together and really build on the opportunity that the Millennium Summit that gave us to really pull that forward. And in some ways, I'm so glad they did, because I don't think as an intergovernmental system we were going to get there, and we certainly wouldn't have got there in 2000 or 2001. They did suffer a little bit because of that. They weren't generally accepted. I was in New York from 2004 to 2008, and there was still then a lot of, well, you know, yes, of course, the MDGs, they're there, but we didn't agree them. Yes, okay, we don't mind them, but we didn't agree them, was the way some of the countries were looking at them. But I think over time, and it did take time, they did become an amazing rallying point for really everyone involved in development, particularly the UN agencies, but also others. But it did take us some time. And I think really the G8, the Gleneagles, and the Make Poverty History and the World Summit was a really significant turning point. And I almost feel a bit bad that we say, well, we've had 15 years to deliver these. I actually think we've really only tried hard for about 10, but that's my personal opinion on that one. And a lot has been achieved. The MDGs have seen extreme poverty halved, and that was by 2010. The number the percentage of undernourished people in the world is almost halved, and primary school enrolments have improved. And on poverty, just to give you an idea of that, that means that more than 1 billion people have been lifted out of extreme poverty. But there's a lot of unfinished business. And, you know, that's, I suppose, in some ways disappointing, and in some ways not to be unexpected. You know, we do have more than 800 million people still in extreme poverty. We've got 57 million children of primary school age not in school. And progress is pretty uneven. I mean, the MDGs, a lot of the reporting we do, and that figure of people coming out of poverty is a global figure. But if you take that down to the country level, it's quite mixed. And unfortunately, where some of the progress has been the slowest has been in the Pacific. And actually, in the Pacific, we have 3 countries who are not on track to meet any of the MDGs. So that's the kind of goals history. Then the beginning of financing for development. I think this is important as well, because I do see them as very much the yin and the yang. It's all very well to have goals, but if you don't have the means to deliver them, then we're not going to get very far. And this started really in Monterey, the conference there in 2002. And while they followed the MDGs, they didn't really link to the MDGs. There wasn't that kind of conceptual link or even any practical link made. They had some strong content. Domestic resource mobilisation, which is a huge theme out of ADIS, was there in Monterey, but no one really was paying much attention to it. And in fact, I think they had one side event, whereas the side event on domestic resource mobilisation in ADIS led to a commitment to double support for tax reform and improving tax collection in developing countries. So it's it was a big shift. Monterey kind of raised the issues, but was you know, talking about private sector, talking about those things, but was still pretty much an ODA kind of focused agenda. So it wasn't transformative. I'm bringing us back. Get in your time machine. With apologies to the producers of Back to the Future. Now I've done something, I've touched something and it won't move. It's taken us so far into the future. It's sorry? Oh, no, see, no, and last night I have to say I couldn't even get it with the, to have the stars of the show in it. Is that, sorry, my... It's absolutely frozen. Maybe, right? Can you take me to the next slide manually? There you go. That's how good I am at technology. So that takes us then, bring us back to here and now, and the Sustainable Development Goals. And I'm not going to go and repeat everything that Chris has said, but the snapshot is there's 17 goals, there's 169 targets, and it's an agenda that has unprecedented legitimacy, really, because it is intergovernmentally agreed. Now, that means that it's been a rather torturous process, and there are things in there that we wouldn't have necessarily put in there if we'd been writing it ourselves, because it is something where there's had to be compromises as part of getting an agreement, and that's why you end up with 17 rather than 8. And it really has... taken us to a new place in the universality of this, because the MDGs were really 7 goals for developing countries to do, and then goal 8, which was, oh yes, about how the developed countries would help, whereas the Sustainable Development Goals are for all of us. So there's no kind of this bit's yours and that bit's ours, but rather all 17 goals are universal. And that's a very important distinction to it as well. And they build on the MDGs, and there's elements in there that are very familiar, and there are then some very important new goals as well around things like peace and governance, around growth, around oceans, around infrastructure. Oops, sorry, I've gone too far. Now I've stuffed up and gone one too far. Can you take me? Thanks. And financing for development, again, just to kind of show you that the other side of it, it again builds on Monterey and the Doha meeting that was held in between, and it now has a very serious focus on all forms of financing. Again, it's agreed by all countries, so it has that legitimacy, and it has strong links to the SDGs, and that's really important. And it also, very importantly, brings that Rio Plus 20 sustainability agenda through into both the financing and the development goals. Just as a bit of a sidebar on financing, because there's a lot of discussion about all the different flows, and you kind of think, oh, well, yes, there's aid, and I'm sure the private sector, and there's foreign direct investment. I was staggered, excuse me, when I saw this graph for the first time, and I'm sorry, it's probably hard to read, but I'll tell you what each of the bars are. The bottom one's ODA, which is $161 billion. Now, that's absolutely dwarfed. And even if you can see, even if every donor in the world doubled their aid, you're still not going, you might just get to where remittances are, which is at $341 billion. Private investment is $928 billion. Domestic private investment is $3.7 trillion. And domestic government revenues are $5.5 trillion. So in terms of how you're going to be able to fund the Sustainable Development Goals, you have to look at that whole picture, because that's the only way we're going to do it. SDGs are not going to cost billions of dollars, they're going to cost trillions of dollars, and we need to make sure as a global community that all of those resources are being brought to bear on delivering the SDGs. Very quickly, because Christopher's given you a very comprehensive outline of the SDGs and what they mean, but I do want to just also emphasise that it is going to be you know, a much bigger agenda for us all to deliver. But there's some really important elements that were missing from the MDGs. Economic growth, for instance. No matter how much you think trickle down or bottom up, economic growth is an important part of the story. And that's one of the key areas, for instance, that the SDGs do include now. It also includes and embeds a really strong global partnership around delivery. Some of the highlights also, and I think this is important on financing for development, and some of the highlights out of that agenda is it does look at strengthening domestic resource mobilisation, so tax, so customs. It looks at developing capital markets and making sure that all countries are able to access capital, and that's important. It also has a big focus on access to markets and increasing trade and engaging and enabling the private sector. And none of that is to say that ODA doesn't also have a very important role, but it's about saying, well, what is the best role to use ODA? If you go back to that $161 billion versus the trillions, how should we be using ODA in the best possible way? And that, in some countries, is going to be more as a catalyst, and in other countries is going to still be a very more traditional. The Pacific, for instance, we're still going to have a very strong ODA relationship, but in places like Asia, we're shifting more to an economic partnership agenda and thinking about how our ODA can catalyse all those other sources of finance, but also other kind of actions. So what does it mean? Very quickly, I don't think of this as a development agreement. This is now the development agreement. This is the biggest thing we're going to see for the next 15 years. And it has a very modern understanding, I think, of development, and I think that's important. And part of that is around each country having responsibility for its own development. It's also about a strong focus, as I've said, on economic growth. Very importantly, it's about gender equality and women's economic empowerment, and that is a fundamental part of the SDGs and of the financing for development outcome. It talks about the centrality of peace and governance. You know, you only have to look around the world to see that you can't do any of the other goals unless you have peace in places like Syria or Yemen. And it also really does recognise that we must harness all sources of development finance and engage all actors if we're going to deliver this. So I want to talk a little bit, just quickly in my 2 minutes and 38 seconds, on the next steps in all of this. Because we actually have the SDGs agreed a little bit before we actually thought we might. There was a plan for them to be agreed well before the summit in New York in September, but the Financing for Development Agreement was also planned to be agreed well before the Addis Ababa conference and ended up being agreed on the last night of that conference. So the SDGs, I have to say, having been involved in 4 years of UN negotiations, had said I'd eat something made of leather, which was served up to me the morning after on the 3rd of August, they're agreed. So they have been, as that international negotiation has finished, but really they're not signed, sealed and delivered until we have the political declaration and the UN summit in September. So that's the next big thing that will happen internationally. The SDGs technically start when the MDGs end, so the 1st of January. But the other part of the puzzle, the follow-up and review, and what is this all going to mean and how are we going to kind of measure progress, that's still being negotiated. And some of it's going to be a lot easier. I mean, we have a lot of baseline and data on things that were in the MDGs, like health and education. On things like peace and governance, there's a lot more work to do to really work out, well, what is that going to look like when we go back and try to measure. Also, next steps here. So the 2030 Agenda and the Australian Aid Policy are actually relatively well aligned. Now, that's, you know, not like we woke up on the 3rd of August and went, wow, wasn't that good. You know, these are things have been developed in parallel, in a sense, given how long the SDGs and the FFD negotiations and the work behind them have been going. So we already have a strong alignment there, but we'll be certainly looking at how we can and if we need to do more around that. We also need to explain and translate what the agenda means within our own department, across the Australian government, and with the public. And that's actually an area where all of you come in, very importantly, and where we're going to be working with other stakeholders. And Mark Purcell, who you'll hear from later today, we had a meeting only this week to talk a bit more about that and how we might work together. Just like the MDGs, the SDGs will be a focus for international development efforts, so they'll be part of our engagement with the UN, with the World Bank, and with other players like that. And they're also going to be an important part of how we engage our partner countries, because they've signed up to these too. So how they're going to push forward with things like peace and governance and gender, for instance. And what we think and what we hope is that the 2030 agenda is actually going to help all of us deliver better development outcomes, and that it will continue that kind of role that the MDGs played, which was to really, I think, garner the support and focus everybody globally on what it is we're trying to achieve in development. Thank you.